Hi, Betsy Fisher here with the occasional episode of 1000 Fibers Connect Us, conversations about the particular clothing in our closets and the broader role of clothing in our lives. Hi, this is Betsy here with another episode of 1000 Fibers Connect Us, our occasional podcast. And today I'm here with Marie St. Pierre at her headquarters in Rue Chabanel. It's a manufacturing district in Montreal.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me, Marie.
My pleasure.
I've got 10 basic questions for you, but based on our tour, it could actually be 100. Let's start with the basics. Where did you grow up and what drew you to fashion?
I was born in Montreal, and I was always interested in fashion, but not necessarily just as a mean to dress, but I was just impressed with fabrics. Like it just drew to me that I had an attraction to this medium, which was fabric. My mom used to go to Europe and buy these very avant-garde clothes, and I was always fascinated by the fabric. Of course, the visual and the technicity behind the design, but I realized very early that I was drawn to touch and feel of the fabric. So I think that's what made me choose fashion, because I was going to go into architecture, but just the touch of fabric inspired me so much. And I decided that, you know, let's give it a try, knowing that it was a very difficult and tedious way to get to be your designer, independent designer under your own label.
Do you know, you're not the first designer I've met who was also interested in architecture. Is there something about just the creating a structure?
I think it's about volumes, perspective, and construction, how things meet. The fact that clothing are in movement gave me this envy to do something a bit less static than architecture. Architecture is you do a gesture and it stays like that. In fashion, any gesture you do will change with the wearer. And I just love that. I just love this unknown factor in the design that is the wearer actually creating, co-creating with me, because it depends how you wear things. You know, it's not going to look the same. Your personality, how you, it's a very, also intimate, clothes are very intimate. So I like that intimacy with people. I like to understand how they feel, what emotion they get from wearing or seeing something.
I agree completely. There's something so overwhelming about architecture. And I love the chance that you get to make it new and fresh every season. It's a constant renewal.
Also, I think the fast pace of fashion also attract me. The movement, the acceleration. I like things that are moving. I like to challenge myself. I like to move on to a different project. I like to tackle new difficulties. I like to challenge myself all the time. That's my main characteristic. That's why I chose fashion. In architecture, the projects are much longer to fruition. I like that fast pace, that you have to find solution. You have to force your mind to be athletic.
That's a great description, athletic. You also mentioned that it was difficult. So what steps did you take to acquire the skills to become a designer and a producer of these beautiful styles?
Just time, really. And starting my business at an early age, also like right out of school.
Did you go to school for fashion?
Yes, I did. I studied fashion. I knew I was also an independent soul. I knew I had to do my own thing. So coming out of school, I started a little side business doing coats, and it just grew from there. I never decided to start a business in fashion. It just fashion sucked me in.
Well, actually, does your mother feel responsible for you then?
I think she does. And because it was a passion of hers also, it was kind of an acknowledgement to her and odd to her that she inspired me a lot.
Well, you said she went to Europe to buy beautiful avant-garde clothing. Was it because of her business or was it just a personal expression of hers?
So my parents were also art collectioners. So they were surrounded by artists, writers, painters, museum curators. She was always attracted by creativity. So really, she didn't buy much. My parents were not that wealthy.
Please pardon this interruption, but I was so engrossed in Marie's recounting of formative events that I missed the fact that the internet connection had disappeared. Next, you'll hear Marie answering a question about which factors determine the pieces she designs.
The list is very long when I design. It has to go through a system that I think, okay, this is going to last. Not 100%, because there's pieces we need to do so people can have some easier pieces. But in general, you know, 80, 90% of the collection is thought of as timeless, long-lasting pieces with a real identity that will say, oh, you recognize it. It's a Marie St. Pierre. It's not something that and I see a lot of my design being designed for 40 years that there's a lot of them everywhere, you know, but they're mine.
Yeah.
They're my own research and I've created them, you know, so nobody can take that away from me. The fact that I'm Canadian, I don't have the recognition of my design sometimes, which is part of life. It's my karma, I guess, that too. What drives me is not the success of the business, is the success of the relationship I've created with some amazing woman, dressing woman and changing their life, and them writing to me that I'm there with them every day for different situation, difficult ones, for the happiest to the saddest moment of their life. I mean, that's like having a lot of friends and being the love of so many people. And I think at the end of everything, all you do is to get love back. You know, all you do in life is you want to be loved. Whether you do bad, sometimes you choose the wrong way to attract love, but all human beings have a quest to be loved.
I think this is a beautiful way to fulfill that quest. And it sounds like it just hits all of your particular strengths, which are the ability to see the world from different angles and your appreciation of people as individuals, your desire to protect women and to make their roles easier. It's really a remarkable, condensation. Like when it comes down to it, you're right. It is about love and it is about being feeling good, doing good, being good in the world. And the purpose of that is love.
Yes, it's all about love. And when you feel good, you do good. You attract love. You attract, you're like a ray of sunshine. You resonate around your neighborhood. You make people happy around you. And when people are happy, they do better. You know, they strive better in all fields.
Marie, as I've toured the facility, everybody has said, we work hard and we laugh a lot. and Marie Pierre even said, oh, my biggest regret is we don't actually have lunch together because we're all so busy. But we do try to go out on the roof once a week. So, yes. So I think that that's a sign of a super healthy business too, that people enjoy being together and striving, because there's nothing easy about the fashion business.
No, it's a very complicated business to be in, especially the competition of it being so powerful in terms of money, in terms of how many products they can launch in a season, and what the business aspect of it is. It hasn't really changed for so many years. We're doing collection, seasonal, and I think designers are sick of that, most of them, and they want
sick
to
of
do
the demands of endlessly creating something on a timeline, or
sick
what are they
of the sick of the business aspect of it. Why do I have to do something that's going to go on sale in 2 months? That's the problem, and that's what designers are right now fed up about. Mm-hmm. They want to design the best clothes. And I think I'm not the only one who strive to deliver amazing goods. I mean, there's lots of designers who have that, you know, the same purpose in mind. And then you go into the business, and the business, you know, brings your product down to a product that has a 2-3 months lifespan on the shelves. And that has to stop.
Well, one of the things, my experience with your classics, for example, is they never go on sale. We Yes. never put them on sale. Yeah. And I love the fact that they hold their value. And also I see on your site too, that you will keep pieces from former collections. Mm-hmm. And when I look at last spring's dress, sometimes I'm ready for it now.
A lot of
I'm not
time.
Always ready no. for what you're doing in the moment. So I think it's
a 2-year gap. Usually people always want what I did 2 years ago. So what I designed almost 3 years ago, for some reason, I'm a little too fast for people, because that's my
is that your strength, that you're ahead?
It's a strength, and it's I don't want to stay in the status quo position. I always want to move forward. I always want to challenge myself, my design, my vision of things. I always, so people are like, Marie, stop. Just let's enjoy the moment. Like, let's take this now. And I'm already like miles ahead. Mm-hmm. I mentioned I don't sleep much, you know. Because I don't sleep much, I go faster than others. You know, my days are longer. I have more than twice the amount of time that most people do because I sleep so little.
How much do you sleep?
I used to sleep 3 hours a night.
Oh my!
Yeah. That was my regular. Now I'm more at five, six, pushing it.
My goodness. That is very little sleep.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Did either of your kids inherit that? Have you all, no. do you have a frenetic household?
No, my husband was like that too.
Oh my.
Yeah. So we were both very, we didn't sleep. I could find energy in power napping, and mm-hmm. I had all sorts of, and you have to have a healthy lifestyle, of course, to do that, to sleep little like this. So. Anyways, but that's my nature. I was 3 years old when I realized that I would never sleep 8 hours a night. You know, like the nights were so long. So my days are longer than most people.
Right.
So when I say I'm 35 years in business, actually, I feel like I'm 70 years in the business. I'm a real pro.
I understand that. Is it just 35 years? I don't think so. Is it?
It's a little, yeah, it's 35 years, but, and maybe 36, yeah.
So you opened in 1987?
Yes.
Ah, that's pretty neat. I opened Betsy Fisher in 88, but I wish I'd known you even when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I had to learn a lot, and I had to acquire the kind of customers who are ready for your goods. And I'll never forget the first time I was at Coterie and bought classics, and it's been going strong ever since.
That's good. It's a barrier for sure.
Yeah.
And I see that the women who are attracted to my clothes are women who are in the quest to find themselves, and find, and understand that they need help with their clothes, in order to achieve what they have to achieve during the day. It's a complete thing. You need a good cream for your face. You need good clothes. You need good shoes to run around. You need good people around you. You're never alone. And clothes are a fabulous way to communicate.
Do you know, it makes me realize that you were very young when you started this. So how did you, just if you don't mind, how did you go from, you went to school for fashion, but you must have been about 23 when you started Maison Marie Saint Pierre.
Yeah, maybe I was 25.
So, how did you know to tell? Were you sewing all things yourself?
Yes.
Oh my goodness! How many garments a year were you producing?
It stopped very early because I encountered success very quickly.
Ooh.
So I put up my samples, and I was I was not a great sewer, mm-hmm. but I was an amazing presser. And when you can press clothes good, you can make them beautiful. And the pressing is very important in the garment. I mean, we don't mention it very often, but our pressing changes everything. So the iron helped me to be to mount beautiful clothes, you know. So I started with a collection of coats. I was really in a quest to do a summer job, really, just out of school. And it was a difficult moment in fashion when I graduated in 87. And, you know, there was a crisis. And so I just started sewing some coats. And I said, I'm going to go see stores and see if they, you know, I thought it was an easy business at the time, you know, like, okay, I'll do clothes, coats, and I'll sell them to the stores, and I'll find someone to help me. So, but after maybe not even a month, I was down opening up a small studio with people, one sewer with me, and then two, and then three. It just went very fast. By 6 months after, I was having a full-blown studio with, I was still cutting myself, cutting all the clothes myself, because cutting is very important in quality. And also, I learned about fabric a lot with cutting, being in hand with the fabric. And also because I could make sure that I don't lose too much fabric, that I, you know, I was being not only a good citizen, but I could make money out of that, you know, venture. So I cut everything and I press everything. So I was doing the beginning and the end, and in the middle I had people who were sewing things. But I gave the final look with the pressing, and I started the whole thing cutting. And I love cutting. That was like something that I love to do. I love to do things with my hands. So.
How many years after that were you showing in New York, for example? Because that was,
oh my God,
my goodness,
not too long,
right?
No. We were the first Quebec designer to go to the Coterie show, because they never accept Canadian designers there. So I went there with a friend of mine who was designing also a line, and we got accepted as a team. We didn't have mean to go to the Coterie, and we call it the team of two.
Oh my.
So we could share the showroom fees and share the hotel room.
Absolutely.
And everything else.
She sat on your lap on the train.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
wow.
The cab ride and everything.
Everything.
So, yeah. And so we went to the Coterie, and we had a pretty good reaction to our clothes. I mean, I sold and she sold. And so things went on, you know, but I didn't know anything about the wholesale business at the time. I was selling coats to stores, but it was not really it was wholesale, but it was not the typical wholesale where you take, you know, orders 3 months, 6 months prior to the collection being delivered. Me, you order me 2 coats, 5 coats, 10 coats, you'll have them next week, you know. So the time frame, and now it's a different story. You have to buy fabric months in advance. You have to have my fabric made, you know, like it's almost a year and a half process right now to do a collection. So.
And you do 5 collections a year?
Yes.
That's a remarkable amount of creativity. And I'm just cracking up at this idea of you've gone from 1 to 60 in these years, as far as employees go, but the process of being wise with your fabric, the constant inspiration, the innovation that you're describing that goes along with, you have a very entrepreneurial bent, clearly.
Yes, I am an independent soul. I had to build something. I had to build something of my own, but I made lots of mistakes because I never thought I'd start a business. It just went, you know, organically to do that. So I've learned on the ground.
Exactly.
And so that's school of life.
School of life. Well, in these 35 years, there have been ups and downs financially across the world. What's been a tough time?
It's been tough the whole time. Can I?
Yeah, please,
you know,
tell us.
Yeah, it is. And for most designers, I'm not the only one. We're very few independent brands, designer in the world. There's not that many that do what I do. It's the dream of a lot of people to have a studio where you can afford your own pattern makers and your cutters and your sewers and your sample makers and your assistant and your own team to do, you know, your media and your marketing and your finance. I mean, most people don't have the means to have all that. You finance the goods for so long in this fashion industry, in the way it goes. You know, you do your samples, you go and you sell them, you pay to be at trade shows, and then you take orders, and then you order your fabric that you have to prepay most of the time because that's the way the business do. So you're always paying. And at the end, you're waiting for the client that you delivered to pay you 3 months after. So the delays are extremely long, and the stress of cash flow is just unbearable in that business. The cash flow is the most difficult aspect of this business. So it has always, when it goes well, cash flow is even harder. When it doesn't go well, cash flow is also hard. There's no moment where actually you say, oh, we are sailing through. I mean, I was reading in Business of Fashion that Victoria Beckham, after I don't know how many years she's doing her line, she finally break even this year.
That's a long time to be in debt. Yes. And that means she had to find people to carry her for that long.
The article was meant to say, well, right now, this business of being a designer can only be accessed to very rich people. Because nobody's going to be behind your talent, really. There's so many brands, so many. So if you want to be a renowned brand and an international brand, if you want to have that capacity to speak to a broad audience because you're already a niche-oriented product, you need to have a lot of money. And that's one thing I did not realize when I started. I did not realize that I would be in need of money year after year after year after year after year. So it's a it's very stressful as a business. It's not like a subscription-based business where, you know, you actually have your subscriber coming in every, there's no such thing. You don't know if your clients are going to be faithful. You don't know if your clients are going to go back to work after COVID. You don't know what their lifestyle is going to be. There's a lot of changes that you have to be equipped to move fast and to let go and to take risk all the time. You have to have that flexibility of mind to tackle a multitude of problems, because we're not even talking about production right now, which is a nightmare for most companies, especially when you do things differently. It's so difficult. There's like every piece of garment has its own lot of problems, whether it's the fabric is not responding the way it was when it was sampled because it's a different machine that makes the sample yardage and the production yardage. The color, the dye that you use will transform the technicity of the fabric. There's so many variables. Whether your fabric traveled on a roll that was standing up for hours instead of being on the ground because they just put them up in the crate, is going to change the whole aspect of your fabric. It's going to stretch in one way. It's going to pull on fibers. If it's humid, it's going to be even worse. So when the fabric come in, we have to go to a cycle of just recalibrate all the fabrics that have traveled, and they have to be flat. They have to stay flat. All the fabrics here are flat. You never see a roll like this. There's a reason for that. So it's like a bottle of wine, you know, it's the same principle. You cannot move around. It has a life of its own. It's fiber, it's fabric. It's not like gyprox, you know, it does move. And even gyprox would move around, you know, certain circumstances, but fabrics are very particular, and they're very not difficult to take care of, but you need to know about fabrication, dyes, and you do a collection and you offer it in three colors, not one of the colors is going to react the same way. Sometimes you have to adjust last minute, do last minute adjustment because the color doesn't react the same way.
Do you mean the color changes how the fabric behaves when you sew it?
Oh. Yes, the dye.
Yeah.
The dye will change how the fabric behaves, the weight sometime of it, the touch. So it could be harder to sew. It could be...
So there's the finance difficulty, the production difficulty, and then if you don't mind just telling me again, there's the, you don't have any difficulty with inspiration, do you?
No, that's a good thing.
That's good.
Yes, it's the contrary. I'm like, people have to always say, stop. Like there's so many clothes, you know, stop designing. And I can still design over and over again because I always want to make, I always try to make better clothes. I always have a, you know, but at this stage of my life, I'm trying to go back into my archives and see what I've done that I could rework and do better, or what I've done that I've not redone, or that could be the right time now. You were saying there's a delay before people actually will adopt my clothes because I'm not following trends. I'm definitely ahead of the trends, because I'm deep into the art world, into the architecture lifestyle. I travel. I try to live different experience. I want to see novelty wherever I go. I try to view new things, to see new things, to experience new things. If I go to Paris, which I used to go twice a year or three times a year, I would never stay in the same district. Why? Because I wanted to discover something new. Some people, they go, they have their favorite hotel, they go, they feel home. I never want to feel home. I move every 2-3 years. I have to, you know, reload everything and just start from scratch. I need that kind of, it keeps my mind open.
I don't think most people don't want their minds to be that open. That's really interesting.
Yeah. That's why I don't sleep much. You know, my mind works all the time.
Actually, I do know that feeling, but I usually consider it a problem. I think I have to train it to, I have to use it better. That's a beautiful use of that energy. I'm just going to ask you a technical question, Canadians, Americans. I remember once you had a collection that had a little fold that came out in the front as opposed to many of the ones that come out on the side. And your sales rep told me, oh, the Canadians love that one, but the Americans, absolutely not.
That's true.
So how are Canadians and American consumers different?
Well, I'm going to go even deeper. The okay. West, British Columbia and Toronto and Montreal don't even like the same thing.
Okay. So.
And in the U.S. is the same thing, you know, the middle West or New York or San Francisco, they don't like the same thing. Fashion is a very personal thing. But I think, as you mentioned, the classic are there to kind of reunite everyone around that brand. And it's like the pillars of the brand. So these are common
right.
to all of them.
I would call them the gateway to the brand.
Yeah, that's true. It's exactly. It's the entry door to the brand. Yeah, this is where you enter the brand. So they are timeless. They are new in the way I construct them. But at the same time, they are classic enough to open gates to new people to come into the brand. It's not every piece that's going to attract someone who wants to come into the brand and experience it. They'll come in with, you know.
Well, that speaks to your practical business sense too.
Yes.
Because you need to constantly invite new people in to the brand.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Well, I know that you've had some really special projects. For example, you've done uniforms for the symphony and yes. hotel furniture.
Yes.
And you even do evening and bridal, which many yeah. people might not be aware of. What of these special projects give you the most joy and satisfaction?
I just designed a faucet collection. Did they show you the catalog? Yes, I designed
Fantastic.
A faucet. And right now I'm working with, I want to branch out a lot on more design fields that I'm attracted to. I feel I can design anything. When you design fashion, you can actually design almost anything. So, I'm attracted right now to design spaces, furniture. I've done furniture before. I can design art object. I can do installation. I'm attracted, and I have ideas for all of that. I can redesign almost everything. When I designed the faucet, I really did something that does not exist on the market. It's totally unique. It's me, and it's thought of the way I think of fashion. It has to be timeless. It has to be extremely functional. It has to be beautiful. It has to feel good. It has to be an amount.
Again, interrupted service leaves the short remainder of the conversation sadly between Marie and me. Fortunately, I've been invited back to her atelier, and it will be effortless to pick up exactly here, where designing fashion makes designing anything easier. If you'd like to get a visual sense of the Marie St. Pierre atelier, please see our 2-minute video on the Betsy Fisher online YouTube channel. To shop, please visit the Betsy Fisher website or the Marie St. Pierre official site, www.shop.mariestpierre.com. Thank you for listening, and please send comments and suggestions to Betsy@betsyfisher.com. We'll be back with another episode one of these days. Thank you.